And welcome to Bio 231. It is September 10th. We're going to finish up tissues today and then move on to integument system. So this is September 10th and 231, Monday. Anybody have any questions over what we've been talking about so far? No questions so far? Excellent. All right, so we were just starting some connective tissues. But let's review a little bit about epithelium. And as a matter of fact, let's see if you can recall, just from memory, what are the four tissue types that make up your body, the four main categories. Number one is epithelium. Number two is connective. Three is muscle, okay, specialized for contraction. And four is nervous tissue, right? So those are the only four tissues that make up your whole body. So what we have right here is a nice classification scheme for epithelium. We classify it by number of layers, but also by the cell shape. We give both in the description. So if there's many layers from the basal surface to the apical surface, it's stratified. If it's just one layer of cells, it's simple. And then we classify an epithelium by the shape of the cells on the apical surface right here. So these are squamous cells, which means they're like pancakes. These down here are kind of cuboidal, but this is not a stratified cuboidal epithelium. This is a stratified squamous epithelium. And you can see the cell shapes right here. Okay. All right, so connective tissue. The other thing that this slide demonstrates is that the cells that make up an epithelium are tightly and closely packed together. There are cell junctions that glue the cell membranes together. There's no space between the cells and epithelium. As a matter of fact, they're so tightly spaced together, there's not even room for a blood vessel in epithelium. So epithelium does not contain blood vessels. Connective tissue, on the other hand, is quite a bit different. All right, so let's look at a general slide of connective tissue. Here's connective tissue right here. Let's see if I can get that buzz out of the microphone, maybe. Yeah, that's a little bit better. All right, so here we have an illustration of connective tissue. It's got two main compartments. There are cells, and then there's the extracellular material. Extracellular just means things that are outside the cell. And so here we see some cells. All right, so here's a cell, here's another cell. There's a big space between the cells. That's a characteristic of connective tissue, and that space between cells is what we call the matrix. It's got a special name. And matrix can be broken down into two components as well. It could be made up of fibers. Here I see some big thick fibers. Here I see some thinner ones that are highly branched and even thinner ones that are even more highly branched. These are fibers. All right? And then there's also something called ground substance. Here's ground substance. I don't see any fibers. And ground substance acts like a sponge. There are proteins that are dissolved in solution that absorb water, that hold water in your body, so this is actually a water compartment. And materials can diffuse through this water from one cell to another, or from a blood vessel that's in connective tissue to a cell through the water that's held in the ground substance. So you got fibers and ground substance. Here is one cell type that I definitely want you to know, and you can see it attaching itself to these fibers, and this is a cell that's responsible for secreting these proteins into solution to make these fibers right here. And this is called a fibroblast. So a fibroblast is responsible for secreting fibers into the matrix. Now, how do you know this is not an epithelium? Yeah, because the cells are really far apart, right? Because there's an extensive matrix. And it's this extensive matrix that gives connective tissue its special properties, not the shape of the cells or the layers of cells in an epithelium, but what the cells are secreting into the matrix. Okay, here's an adipocyte. Here's a lymphocyte. And here's a neutrophil. We're going to be able to identify those in just a little bit. All right, so here we see a nice micrograph. This picture could be on your practicum, so this is where practicum questions come from, just the nice pictures that are in your book. So make sure you can identify each of these tissues that I go over in lab and also in lecture, but also be able to label these lead lines right here. So not just identify the tissue types, but also be able to tell where this lead line is pointing. It's pointing to this nucleus right here of a particular cell that's secreting this collagen fiber into the matrix. And what would we call this cell right here that secretes a fiber into the matrix? That's a fibroblast, right? So on the practicum, always read the question first. Sometimes the question might say, name the organelle. If that's the case, what would you say? Nucleus. But if it says name the cell, what are you going to say? Nucleus? No, don't say nucleus. You want to say fibroblast, right? So always read the question first. That's actually the most difficult part of the practicum, is just you got to force yourself to read the question. All right, then here are the thick fibers. These are the collagen fibers. These are like Kevlar or steel cables within the matrix. They hold things together. Here are the elastic fibers. And what can you tell me about what kind of properties does elastic have? It stretches, and then when you let go, as long as you don't overstretch, then that fiber goes back to its original length. So it kind of allows your skin to move and is pliable and then pulls your skin back where it was when you relax. Collagen, on the other hand, is a really stiff, strong fiber. It doesn't stretch at all, and it's not meant to. Okay, so it's, like I said, like a steel cable. It can help attach bones to each other, forms ligaments, and it also forms tendons. It can attach muscle to bone as well. When I look at this kind of tissue, which is areolar CT, when I say CT, what does that mean? Connective tissue. Right, so on a practicum, you don't have to say connective tissue. You can just write abbreviated CT. When I look at this slide right here, areolar CT, it looks like a stained glass window to me with a bunch of different window panes all kind of like glued together or leaded together to form a window pane. So this is areolar connective tissue. Here is reticular connective tissue. Here are the reticular fibers. We're at a pretty high magnification, 555 power. So these reticular fibers are magnified nonetheless. They're really thin and they're highly branched. They kind of look like roots of a tree or something, and they stain really darkly. So if you see branching patterns like this, you're going to say reticular connective tissue. And reticular fibers are the weakest one of the three kinds of fibers. It makes up the spleen, and as a result, the spleen does not have a lot of integrity. It suffers a lot with trauma, because these reticular fibers can rip very easily, and then the spleen rips, and you have a lot of blood in the spleen, and it hemorrhages quite a bit. The reticular fibers are so weak that we can't even put a suture into the spleen, because as soon as you put a suture in, then that rips more reticular fibers, causes more bleeding, right, and that's worse for the patient. The fibers that hold a suture the best are what kind of fibers? Collagen fibers, yeah, that we find, for instance, in the dermis of our skin. So we can sew our skin back together pretty nicely. All right, here's the connective tissue, and I see fibroblasts. I can see the nuclei of fibroblasts, and I see a lot of collagen fibers. They're oriented in all directions. I see some from right to left. Here's a bundle that's coming in and out of the plane of the image. All right, this is what we call dense irregular CT. It's dense because of collagens packed very tightly, irregular because the collagen is pointing in all different directions. A good example of where we would find this would be in a joint capsule that should be able to withstand tension in a lot of different dimensions, but not particularly strong in one dimension, like for instance this tendon right here. In the superior to inferior direction, it should withstand a lot of tension, but not from anterior to posterior. The kind of tissue that tendons are made out of, and ligaments, is what we call dense regular. Look at all the collagen packed very close together in sheets, parallel sheets. Again, there are fibroblasts that secrete that protein into a solution. And this particular fiber can withstand a lot of tension as we look from left to right on the slide, but not if we put tension from top to bottom on the slide, because then these collagen fibers can separate and that can rip a tendon. So that's why it's important to use joints only in the way that they're designed and not twist a joint, not twist an ankle, because you can separate these tendons in your ankle and ligaments in your ankle pretty easily. So here is dense connective tissue, but it is regular as opposed to irregular dense connective tissue that we see on this slide right here. Here is a micrograph only at 85 power. These are elastic fibers. All right, and here's a blood vessel coming off the base of the heart, the aorta, and the aorta is designed so that when the heart pumps blood, it can actually expand kind of like a balloon. And then when the heart relaxes, the aorta goes back down to its regular shape, because that's what elastic fibers do. So the aorta actually helps maintain blood flow through the cardiovascular system when the heart is relaxing, because it can blow up like a balloon and then shrink back down when the heart relaxes. So that's elastic connective tissue, a lot of elastic fibers. Another kind of connective tissue is cartilage. And here's a really good example of cartilage. I see a cell here and here, separated by a large space, and I don't see any fibers in this space. It's just ground substance. This is what we call Hyaline CT, Hyaline cartilage CT. It's pretty much devoid of fibers. So it's really slippery. It's well lubricated because of the water in the ground substance. These little bubbles right here contain the cells that maintain the cartilage. These are living cells that we call chondrocytes. So anytime you hear that term chondro, you should think of cartilage. And cartilage, when I look at this, I don't see a stained glass window. I just see a speckle pattern, like I'm looking at a brook trout or something like that, or a rainbow trout that has a speckle pattern to it. These bubbles are what we call lacunae, little pits or little lagoons within the matrix. And inside the lacunae is a chondrocyte, and here I can see one with a nucleus. Here I can see a nucleus of a chondrocyte here and here too. And maybe I can see some little fibers that help position the chondrocyte right inside the lacunae. All right, so on a practicum in lab, you should be able to identify this as Hyaline cartilage CT, but also know the name of this cell right here because it's labeled on the slide. There's a nice lead line right here, and you should also know what this little bubble is called. That's a lacuna. Okay, and what's the space between cells called in a connective tissue? Matrix. And you see that clearly on this slide as well. All right, another kind of cartilage. And again, I just see sort of a speckle pattern. I see a little bubble with a chondrocyte on the inside of that lacunae. And in the matrix, right now I see some fibers that are highly branched. So I know it's not collagen. These are elastic fibers. So this is elastic cartilage CT. So on the practicum, I always say what the general class of the tissue is, but also the specific kind. Because I don't want people to say that this is elastic cartilage epithelium or elastic cartilage muscle. Right? It's not. It's elastic cartilage, what kind of tissue? CT. Yeah, you can just say CT. All right, so here are some elastic fibers. And cartilage is kind of nice because it can form a structure, but it's a lot lighter than bone. So it takes a lot less energy to maintain and haul around with you day in and day out. This kind of cartilage is kind of nice because this organ, your ear, for instance, can bend. It has elastic fibers in it, and if you let go of your ear, what happens to it? It flops back up into the position that it should be in. Right? So the ears can bend a little bit, but then they go back to their normal shape. But elastic fibers are not as strong as collagen. They can be damaged. And if somebody damages their ear repeatedly, these elastic fibers then get really thick and highly branched, and they're not quite so linear anymore, like in this dimension right here. And that produces what we call a cauliflower ear if somebody gets their ear damaged quite a bit, like a boxer, for instance. All right, there's one more kind of, does anybody know what the name of these cells are inside this lacuna right here? That's a chondrocyte, right, because chondro is a cartilage cell. Let's look at some more chondrocytes. Not quite as high magnification, but again, it's just kind of a speckle pattern, but I see some fibers. Actually, I see a lot of fibers in this particular micrograph, and these are thick fibers, and they all run in parallel sheets. They're not highly branched like those elastic fibers. These are collagen. Remember, collagen is the strongest kind of fiber. This is the strongest kind of cartilage that makes up intervertebral discs, the cartilage between the vertebral bodies of vertebrae. So there's a tremendous amount of weight that is being supported by these fibrocartilage discs right here, especially in the lower regions of the vertebral column, for instance, like the lumbar region right here. You have some fibrocartilage in your knee that we call those menisci. The knee meniscus is made out of fibrocartilage, which is what the toughest kind of cartilage, and it resists compression and it helps protect the bones, right, that are next to each other in the vertebral column but also in the knee. There's a couple other places in the body where we find this kind of tissue. All right, what's a general class of tissue of fibrocartilage? Muscle? Nervous tissue? Epithelium? No, it's CT. Yeah, it's CT. Always try to think of the general case. Now, this slide is interesting because it looks like we're taking Bio 101 or 102 or 111 or something. It looks like a botany slide. Why do I say that? What does my eye pick up here? I don't see a speckle pattern. I see the major pattern is rings. Right? I see a ring right here. Each one of these rings is what we call a lamella. And then I see a lacunae right here, and there's a cell inside that lacuna. And then I see another lamella, and then I see a lacuna and another lamella, and another one here, and another one here. So this structure is rings inside rings, and this structure is very important because it resists compression. So for instance, I don't have a pen on me or laying around anywhere, but here's a marker, okay, and it's basically just a tube. I could probably snap this marker if I push in the middle and bend it from end to end, okay? But if I push on it from end to end like this, how hard would I have to push to break the marker if I push from top to bottom? Really, really hard. Probably it would go through my hand before it would break because it's a tube. All right, so tubes resist compression. So here's a long bone in your body. This is the humerus. It resists compression because even at the microscopic level, there are tubes with inside tubes. And these tubes with inside tubes are next to what? Tubes inside tubes inside tubes. And they're next to more tubes inside tubes. And then surrounding all these tubes are even more tubes of these lamellae. So this is an extremely strong structure. It resists compression, but it can be fractured, right, if you hit it from the side relatively easily. All right, so this is what we call bone connective tissue. These things are not chondrocytes because where do you see chondrocytes?
Cartilage.
In cartilage, and this isn't cartilage, this is bone. So these are what we call osteocytes. And osteo, anytime you hear this term osteo, you should think of bone. So instead of calling this bone tissue, you could call this osseous tissue. Same thing, because osteo or osseous means bone. Okay, so you got lamellae, you've got lacunae with cells, and these cells are called osteocytes. And then in the very center of these tubes, here are blood vessels. And there's even nerves that run through here as well. There are arteries and veins that move up and down the length of the bone. So when you fracture a bone, guess what happens? These blood vessels break, and there is hemorrhage, and it could be a severe hemorrhage if it's a large bone, and people have died of hemorrhage when they break a femur or something like that, if you don't have proper medical care. So broken bones are dangerous. It also says that this tissue is a living tissue, even though it kind of reminds me of that column that's holding up the roof right here, that cement column in the room. The bones in your body are not made out of cement. It's a living tissue because it's got blood supply. It's got living cells, these osteocytes right here. And I can't find the reference for this, but I learned this one time. And that is these cells replace your entire skeleton every 5 years. So every 5 years you have a new skeleton. And it's rebuilt according to the way that you use your body. So if you're athletic, your bones get bigger and stronger. All right, if you're a couch potato, your bones get weaker and thinner as a result of that, right? So that's why exercise is important to keep bones nice and strong and healthy. Of course, diet is important too because in the matrix right here, what are some minerals? Anybody know some minerals that are put into the matrix to make bones strong?
Calcium,
that's right, and some phosphorus as well, but calcium is important. Should have good calcium in your diet, phosphorus, and then you need a vitamin as well, like vitamin D, in order to absorb that calcium that is in your diet to make your bones strong. Now, there is a condition that everybody will suffer through as we get older, but it's more important for women because they typically have smaller bones to begin with. Males are a little bit protected, but they still suffer the same disease. And it's so strange that everybody in a population will suffer from the same disease. Usually, you know, because we're all different, we don't all come down with the same cold or same flu at the same time. Some people have resistance, but not to this particular disease. What's this called? Osteoporosis, right? So to protect yourself from osteoporosis, it's important to have, what, exercise, the proper diet with that vitamin in there as well. Protects you from demineralizing your bones as we get older, because you'll see in this class that calcium is not only important for bones, but for even far more important purposes in your body. And when you start to run low on calcium, your body goes to bones to get it so these other processes don't suffer. Right? But you do sacrifice bone as we get older. Here's another kind of, does this look like epithelium or connective tissue? I would say connective tissue because the cells are separated, and here's the matrix between the cells. This is sort of a strange connective tissue compared to the previous one that we looked at. The previous one had a solid matrix filled with calcium and phosphate, makes it really, really strong. This one right here is a fluid matrix, and it is blood. So blood is an interesting connective tissue. It can connect your heart with your brain, can connect your heart with your lungs with all the muscles in your body, delivering oxygen, taking away waste products, and delivering nutrients. And so it flows. So here's a connective tissue that can actually flow from one part of your body to the other. The matrix, or the fluid part of blood, is what we call plasma. All right, the other part of blood are what we call formed elements. Formed elements are just cells. Here are red blood cells. Do you see a nucleus inside this red blood cell? No, it doesn't have a nucleus. There's no room for a red blood cell to have a nucleus. It's loaded with a chemical that carries oxygen in our bodies, and that's called hemoglobin. So a red blood cell only lives for about 120 days, doesn't have a nucleus, so it can't repair itself, so it just gets recycled, gets broken down and recycled in your body. I see some other cells. Now, what about this one here? Does it have a nucleus? Indeed, it does. As a matter of fact, the whole cell is mostly made up of this big spherical nucleus. This is a white blood cell, as is this one over here. But this particular one is what we call a lymphocyte. All right, so if you see a white blood cell that has this appearance with a nucleus, and the nucleus makes up almost the entire intracellular space, a lymphocyte, and the job of all white blood cells is to fight infection. So a lymphocyte is important for fighting infection, as is this one over here. But this is what we call a neutrophil. Notice how differently shaped the nucleus is. It has many different lobes to it. These are the most common kinds of red blood cells that we have in our blood. There are three other kinds that I don't have a slide of, and I don't want you to know for the practicum, okay? But I do want you to be able to identify this white blood cell as a neutrophil, and this white blood cell as a lymphocyte, right? And these all make up formed elements. The last thing on this slide, it's not labeled, but I want to tell you a little bit about it. Since blood is a fluid, if you damage this blood vessel right here, if you cut this blood vessel by accident, what happens to blood, connective tissue in your body? It starts to flow out of your body. And then you lose the ability to carry oxygen, fight infection, and things of that nature. So one important property of blood is that it can coagulate. It can form a plug. When you damage a blood vessel, it will then plug up the blood vessel so that you stop losing blood. And one key item for preventing blood loss is this little cell fragment right here. This is called a platelet. Platelet is not part of plasma. It's part of the formed elements. And a platelet is important for stopping blood loss when a blood vessel gets damaged. And they're really, really tiny, but I can see one right here. Doesn't really have a nucleus, right? But it does its job preventing blood loss when a blood vessel gets damaged. All right, so what kind of tissue is this again? That's CT. All right, another kind of atypical connective tissue, got to go way back to the front over here, is this one right here. All right, so let's take a look at this one. What did we say? What part of a connective tissue gives that tissue its important properties? Is it the intracellular space or the extracellular space for connective tissue? It's the matrix, the extracellular space. Remember, it could be a fluid so it flows, or it could be a solid cement like in bone that makes bones really rigid. All right, now here is a really strange connective tissue because it has almost no matrix, almost no extracellular space. And this is called adipose connective tissue. So I'm going to outline a cell. Here's the nucleus of a cell. Here's a cell right here. Right? And then here's another one right here. I just kind of outlined it. Here's the nucleus of it. Now what can you tell me about this cell and this cell? Are they separated by a large space? They are not. These cells are close together. Very atypical for connective tissue, but what is important about these is a vesicle, or what we call a vacuole, that is inside the cell. It's not in the matrix, it's inside the cell. And this vacuole right here contains a droplet of oil or fat. And that's an important energy source for our body. So we can make a lot of ATP from this lipid or oil drop that's inside of a cell, what we call an adipocyte. When you look at this kind of tissue underneath a microscope, it looks like a sponge because you can't really tell that there's anything in here at all. It kind of just looks like a sponge. Okay, you'll be impressed by how clear all these different areas are. But nonetheless, it is still classified as a connective tissue, even though it doesn't have an extensive matrix associated with it. All right, so those are the types of slides that we look at in lab this week, maybe even last week for you guys. And these are some of the slides that could be on the practicum. right? So I have all these color pictures, and I just sent them out to Sam's Club to make photographs out of them. So on the practicum, you'll have nice color photographs. And so you should be able to identify this tissue, right? For instance, right here, I could say, name this organelle on this lead line. What would you say? Nucleus. If I say, name the cell, what would you say? Yeah, you could say fat cell. Okay, but oh, I didn't mention this to you. Fat cell, that's not like really a college level kind of term. Okay, a good higher education label for this cell would be adipocyte, right? Which is what? Fat cell. So maybe write in your notes, adipocyte. And so if I ask for the cell name, say adipocyte. If I ask for the organelle, then you could say nucleus. But if I ask for what type of cell it is, don't say nucleus, because nucleus is what? An organelle, not the name of a cell. All right, so that's the hardest thing on a practicum, is that you have to read the question first. Don't even look at the picture. Don't look at the specimen. Go to the station and read the question, and then the correct answer comes to you really nice and easily. All right, so those are connective tissues. Let me see where I am here. All right, so I talked about all of this stuff. Indeed, I did. Okay, and bone, blood, cartilage, the three types of cartilages. All right, so chondrocytes are in cartilage. Osteocytes are found in bone or osseous connective tissue. All right, muscle tissue. Let's take a look at some muscle tissue. We got three kinds of muscle tissue. So not quite as extensive as connective tissues. And muscle, no matter what kind of muscle tissue it is, it's specialized for a particular purpose. Muscle tissue and nervous tissue is similar in a lot of respects that we'll see in this class and in a physiology class. But muscles can do something special that a nerve can't. And what is that? When it gets excited electrically, just like a nerve, it shortens. A nerve doesn't shorten. It just passes on that electrical information. But when a muscle gets excited electrically, it contracts. So muscle shortens or contracts. And this particular kind of muscle we see is a long fiber. We saw some cells previously that didn't have a nucleus in them, namely those red blood cells. Here is a cell that is multinucleated. And that's because at one point in time, it was made up of a cell here, and then another cell here, and another one here, another one here, another one here. And during development, all of those cells fused together to make this big, long fiber. So this particular muscle cell, sometimes we just call it a fiber. And this kind of muscle attaches one bone to another bone. And when it gets excited, what happens? It pulls those bones together, and it moves your skeleton around. And so we call these kinds of muscles skeletal muscles. And you have voluntary control over your skeletal muscles, right? You made a definite choice to be in lecture today, and you walked in and you're using your skeletal muscles to walk in, and you're not using your skeletal muscles right now to walk out. So you're making a conscious choice to stay here in the room, right? And as a matter of fact, skeletal muscle is the only kind of effector, any kind of organ in your body, that you have voluntary control of. It's the only thing. Everything else in your body is taken care of through an automatic system that we call the autonomic nervous system, or automatically, or endocrine system. All right, so when you look at this slide right here, what kind of sticks out right away? What's the impression you get right away? I see all these stripes, and those stripes have a special name. We call them striations. And that's because of the special machinery. There are special proteins inside these muscle cells that can actually cause the cell to shorten. And it's the arrangement of that machinery that gives the appearance of these striations. All right, so skeletal muscle is voluntary control. And they're long and linear fibers. And they're highly striated. Those are some good characteristics of skeletal muscle. Another kind of muscle is this one right here. It's similar to skeletal muscle. In what way that you can see? It still has striations, right? So the internal machinery for this kind of muscle is the same. It is still specialized for contraction, but these cells are short. Here is the beginning of one cell. Here's the end of it on the other side. So these are short. All right, they're also branched. Here's the beginning of one, here's the end of the same cell, but it has a branch to it. So these are highly branched cells. These make up the heart or the myocardium. So this is what we call cardiac muscle. Since these muscle fibers are short, okay, when they contract, they would have a tendency to pull apart from each other. But if they were to pull apart, when the heart contracts, there would be a big hole in the heart right here, and the blood would come squirting out. So these heart cells should be glued together so that they don't separate. And these structures right here are what we call intercalated discs. They make sure that the ends of these two cells are tightly glued together so they don't pull apart. But it also has another important function. And that is, when the heart is beating, one part shouldn't contract, and then followed by another part, followed by another part, followed by another part, because if this area here was going to contract before the other side, then blood would just go from one side of the heart to the other. Right? The heart should contract as a unit. And if the whole heart contracts as a unit, where does blood go? It gets squirted out of the heart. Okay, up into these great vessels, like the aorta right here. So the heart should contract as a unit. And electrical information can hop from one cell to another through the intercalated disc through a special cell junction called a gap junction. A gap junction wires all of these cells together. So as soon as one cell gets stimulated electrically, what happens to the whole heart? All of the cells contract and it beats as a single unit. All right, but not only from right to left, as we see up over here, but also through the whole thickness of the wall from top to bottom, through because these cells are branched. Right, so only one cell has to be stimulated, and then the whole heart will contract, not only from top to bottom, but through the wall thickness as well, because of the branching right here. Now, would that be a good thing for skeletal muscle to have gap junctions? Like if we look at the previous slide over here. Okay, not so good, right? Because if you tell your triceps to contract, if all these cells had gap junctions, then the biceps would contract at the same time. And if I were to straighten my arm out using my triceps right here to grab my Diet Pepsi, right, what would happen if all those skeletal muscle cells in my body were connected together electrically? If I reached out like that, what would happen? All the cells in my body would contract, and I would die of thirst, okay, because I couldn't reach out and grab anything. All right, so cardiac muscle is striated, but it's involuntary. You can't control it. You can influence it a little bit one way or the other. You can slow your heart rate down with meditation or speed it up by thinking of maybe you're going to run a race or win the lottery or something, right? So you can do some things like that. But you really can't control your heart rate. Certainly you can't stop your heart like you can cause your biceps or triceps to relax completely, right? And that's good. You don't really have that ability to do that because you'd only live for a couple seconds if that were to happen. So it's under involuntary control. You don't have control of your heart. The third kind of muscle is what we call smooth muscle. Let's look at the illustration right here. Think of a football and take the pointy ends of a football and stretch it out a little bit, elongate the football. So now you have really pointy ends right here. Right? And that is the shape of these cells. They're not very long. They're not branched. Right? So they're not like skeletal muscle, because they're not very long. They're not like cardiac muscle because they're not branched. And they're also not like skeletal muscle because there's only one nucleus inside the cell. But what's another thing that's absent in this slide right here? It is not striated. The internal machinery for how these cells contract is different compared to cardiac and skeletal muscle. And when we get to muscles, we'll see how different that internal machinery is. All right, smooth muscle makes up the walls of hollow organs inside your body, like digestive tract, respiratory tract, reproductive tract, right, uterus, vagina, made up of this kind of muscle. Smooth muscle does not contract as explosively and violently as skeletal and cardiac muscle. For instance, when your heart beats, it goes boom, right? It almost jumps right outside your thoracic cavity. Can't really see it because it's pretty deep, but if you were to palpate your heart, you could tell. Okay, smooth muscle, on the other hand, contracts very slowly, but it can contract for long periods of time without fatiguing. For instance, during gestation, which can last how long? Like when somebody's in utero, before you're born. Yeah, 9 months, the uterus has to contract, the cervix has to contract for 9 months. I don't know anybody that can lift a 5-pound weight with their biceps and hold it for 9 months, Okay, but that smooth muscle can, right, without fatiguing, thank goodness. Okay, so that's some of the difference between skeletal, cardiac, and smooth muscle. Let's see what else we have on our sheet right here. Skeletal muscle makes up about 40% of your body weight. Maybe somebody in high school. Dragonflies. Anybody remember what a dragonfly looks like? I should show you a video. It's an insect, and it can hover, and it can fly up and down, backwards, forwards, all kind of like a helicopter. Its body weight is 98% muscle, flight muscle. So that would be pretty cool to have a body that's 98% flight muscle, because you could do whatever you wanted to do just flying around. Okay. All right, so here is a comparison and a contrasting of the different kinds of muscle that we have in our body. All right, nervous tissue. That's the last kind. Here's a slide of nervous tissue. And nervous tissue has two types of cells in it. There are cells that look like this right here that has a major part. We call this the cell body, or sometimes the soma. This is a neuron, and the job of a neuron is to gather electrical information and transmit it long distances in the body. So it's for communication. And when it gets excited electrically, it does not contract. It just transmits that electrical information down through these long processes. There's a long process right here. Okay. And so these are what we call neurons. So here's an example, an illustration of a neuron, kind of a gold color. Here's the cell body. There are short processes right here that we call dendrites. And these act as antennas on your TV set. These receive signals from other neurons, okay, and then it sends it to the cell body, and then that information gets transmitted down this long projection that we call an axon. So sometimes there's only one axon, but many short, highly branched dendrites. So dendrites receive, axons send the information, and what connects the two is the cell body right here, and there's the nucleus inside the cell body. And then here is the axon terminus. So this right here is a neuron. So in a neuron, we've got dendrites, we've got cell body, and axon. And it conducts impulses, nerve impulses. Nerve impulses always go from dendrite to cell body, down an axon, down to this axon terminus. It doesn't go the reverse direction. Okay. Your brain sends out signals, but your brain can also receive signals from the periphery. And that's because you have two different sets of nerves with cells oriented in this direction and then the reverse direction for the reverse process. But one neuron can't transmit information both to and from the brain at the same time. Right? A neuron can't do that. It's only in one direction. I see something that's surrounding an axon right here. This is the second kind of cell that makes up nervous tissue. And we call it, generally speaking, a support cell, but another name is called a neuroglia cell or neuroglial cell. And these neuroglia cells make these neurons behave properly, and sometimes they tell neurons how to connect to other neurons, so it helps define what the network is and how the network is defined, how your central nervous system is defined, and the network of nerves in your body gives you a particular kind of intelligence and ability to do things that other animals can't do. All right, so that's why it's a support cell. It doesn't transmit information. It just helps the neuron do its job. I see a lot of support cells on this slide right here. Like here's the nucleus of one, here's the nucleus of another one, and another one right here. They surround the neurons. They don't transmit electrical impulses, but they maintain a really healthy environment for these neurons. And it maintains the health of the neurons so they don't degenerate. And it helps them make connections. And as a matter of fact, that's one way that people explain how we learn things. Okay, so here is an example of somebody's brain. And as we learn things, these cells start to make new connections with other neighboring cells so that it's easy for information to be transmitted from one cell to the other. All right, so as you learn stuff, what's happening to the structure of your brain? It's changing because of the connections. The network is actually changing. So that your brains are going to be totally different at the end of this class compared to the beginning of the class. The numbers of connections and not the overall shape and morphology right here, but the microscopic structure is going to change And that takes a little work and effort on your part. It takes a little bit of time for that to happen. It's actually pretty scary that students turn their brains over to instructors to actually change the inside structure of your brain, okay? So, there's a corollary to that too. And that is, surround yourself with friends that are good for you. Don't pick up bad habits, because guess what you learn? Your brain changes and learns bad habits. And that's just something that you just don't want to have your brain develop with, okay? All right, so this is nervous tissue. What are the two kinds of cells that makes up nervous tissue? Neurons and support cells, or neuroglia. Yeah, you could say neuroglia or neuroglial cells. That's fine, too. As a matter of fact, it's probably good if you just say neuroglia out loud right now. Say neuroglia. Yeah, because it's got a little swing to it, and if you can pronounce it properly, that will help you with the spelling, too. Right? And so when we get to neuroglial, that's just another L on the end of this word right here. That's just an adjective for a support cell. All right, so a nerve impulse is what we call an action potential moving along a nerve fiber. We're going to talk about that when we get into the nervous system. Membranes. I think we talked about membranes a little bit before in chapter number 1. So I might go back to chapter number 1, but let me just see what else is in this chapter here. I think we're doing pretty good. Where's my slide? Oh, here it is. Okay, membranes. Membranes are part epithelium and part connective tissue put together. So there are two kinds of tissues coming together to form a membrane. And there are two main kinds of membranes in our body, and then some minor membranes that I'll mention in just a little bit. But the major kinds are what we call a mucous membrane, and the second one is what we call a serous membrane. And the reason why we talk about these differently is because a mucous membrane lines a cavity that's open to the outside body. And so a cavity that's open to the outside world, could anybody give me an example of a body cavity that's open to the outside world? Nasal cavity, oral cavity, okay? Digestive system is open to the outside world, thank goodness. And it's lined with a mucous membrane. Some mucous membranes secrete mucus onto the surface, onto the apical surface of that membrane, and some don't. That's not a good definition for a mucous membrane, even though it's an adjective of this membrane right here. Right? It just lines a cavity that's open to the outside world. And of course, mucus, you know what mucus is, M-U-C-U-S is the noun. That's that slippery substance that's secreted by a unicellular exocrine gland. And does anybody know the name of that cell that secretes mucus? It's part of an epithelium. It's called a goblet cell. The goblet cell kind of looks like a wine glass, and underneath a microscope it looks really clear because the mucus doesn't absorb a lot of stain, so it kind of has a white appearance, stands out compared to the other cells in that area. Okay, so that's a mucous membrane. Oh, here are all the different tracts that are open to the outside world, as opposed to a serous membrane. A serous membrane lines a cavity which is not open to the outside world. What would be a good cavity that should not be open to the outside world? Like your heart. Okay, you don't want everything that's in the atmosphere having access to your heart. It's surrounded by a serous membrane. And another one would be your lungs, another one would be your digestive system and your reproductive system and your abdominal cavity and pelvic cavities. And a serous membrane is a little bit more complicated because there are three main parts to a serous membrane. And we talked about this. The three parts are the parietal division, the visceral division, right? And then there is a space between these two divisions that's filled with serous fluid. So I'm going to have to go back to chapter 1. Nope, not there. Chapter 1. Here. To show you some serous membranes. And are they in chapter 1? Oh, I'm sure they are. Okay. Let's look at the serous membrane that surrounds the lung, the outside of the lungs, not the inside of the lung. The inside of the lung, of course, is attached to the outside world, so that is a mucous membrane. But the outside right here is not attached to the outside world. Here is the body wall. Here's your rib cage right here. And then here is the serous membrane, and then here is the lung. The three divisions. There's a division of the serous membrane that's right on the surface of the lungs. And I'm going to zoom way in. Zoom, zoom, zoom. Okay. So kind of looks like a red line to me. What color is that right there?
Red,
good. Okay, so this is the visceral pleura. It's part of the visceral serous membrane. And then there's the same membrane over here, but it's not on the lung, it's on the thoracic wall, the wall of the thorax. So this is what we call the parietal division. So here's the parietal membrane, here's the visceral membrane, and then here's the space between the parietal and visceral membrane. This is the serous cavity filled with serous fluid. And this kind of acts as glue that helps attach the wall of the thorax to the surface of the lung so that when you expand your rib cage by going like that, that it helps expand the lungs. And what happens to air then? It flows into your lungs. And when you compress the wall of the thorax, that compresses the lungs, and then air leaves your lungs as a result of that. All right, so that's a really nice serous example of a serous membrane. Same thing for the heart right here. We don't call this the pleural membrane. This is a pericardial membrane, right? And again, here's the first division, here's the second division, and here's the space between them. This first division is the visceral serous membrane. And since it's around the heart, called the pericardium, this is the visceral pericardium. Here is the parietal pericardium. And here is pericardial fluid that fills that serous space right in here. All right, and it should only be about a centimeter thick normally. A little variation as we look around the heart. But just like the lungs, which can have an infection of the pleural membrane, you could get an inflammation or an infection of the pericardial membrane, and then this space fills up with fluid. You can imagine what that would be like in the lungs. If that space fills up in the lungs, then you can't inhale, you can't breathe, then you'll be really miserable. But if the pericardial space gets filled up with fluid, guess what happens to the heart? Then it can't fill with blood because the space is compressing the heart, and so the heart might contract just fine, but if there's no blood in the heart when it contracts, guess what happens? It doesn't pump any blood. And so that can be kind of a danger. Well, that's a very dangerous circumstance when that happens. Okay. And actually, sometimes it's kind of hard to diagnose that one. It's called tamponade when that happens, because you can't hear somebody's heart when it's behind all that fluid. And it's beating, looks electrically like it's fine on an ECG, it's just not pumping blood. So it misleads people a lot of times. Okay, and then the peritoneal membrane around the peritoneal cavity. What cavities make up the peritoneal cavity? Abdominal and pelvic cavity together is the peritoneal cavity. And here is the serous membrane around the peritoneum. Here's the visceral peritoneum, and then here's the parietal peritoneum on the body wall, like the abdominal wall, for instance, with serous fluid in between. All right, so those are all good membranes for you to know about. Some other membranes. Cutaneous membrane is your skin. Okay, the buzz came back. There, went away. Came back again. Cutaneous membrane. That's a stratified squamous epithelium. It's got dense connective tissue. It's got some loose connective tissue in it. A synovial membrane is sort of like a serous membrane because it secretes synovial fluid into a joint, which lubricates the cartilage on the end of bones. But that's another minor kind of membrane. The periosteum and endosteum. What should you think of every time you hear this term osteo or osteum? Bone. And when you hear chondro, what should you think? Cartilage, right? So here are membranes associated with what? Bones or cartilage? Bones, yeah. Periosteum is a membrane that surrounds every part of a bone on the outside. And bones have cavities on the inside of them, and there's a lining on the inside of these cavities inside bones, and that's called the endosteum. Endosteum is the membrane lining the deep cavities within a bone. Those deep cavities inside bones, sometimes we call the medullary cavities. The medulla of an organ is the deep part of an organ, and the cortex of an organ is the more superficial part. Like the cerebral cortex is what? The superficial part or deep part of your cortex, of your brain? Cortex is the superficial part. Medulla is going to be a deeper part. We're going to see that kind of repeated over and over and over again. So if it's not making a lot of sense, you'll catch up. You'll catch that idea really fast in this class. Cortex is superficial. Medulla is deep. So medullary surface is the deep part of a bone. But the periosteum is on the cortical surface, which is the superficial surface. It's at the outside of a bone. All right, so that's it for tissues. So I want to use this time right now, I believe, to do some flash quizzes. I didn't have time in lab this morning to do a flash quiz, but I think we'll have time right now to do some of these. There is a video in Blackboard. It's a flash file, so you need a flash player. So I don't think it works really well with Safari or Macintoshes, but it works really nice with PC computers running Internet Explorer. And basically, it's just this thing right here, and I want to switch this over to a different mode of projection. I think I go like this. Nice. All right, so what's this a picture of? Not much. It looks like a rectangle. It looks like a square to me, okay? Because this is a rest station. Some of you have worked with this with me in lab, but some people haven't already. So this will help you for the first practicum, because the first practicum is going to include phases of mitosis plus all the tissue histology slides, as well as skin, which maybe I'll start today or maybe next time. We'll see how far we get. All right, so here's a picture. What the heck is happening right here? Kind of got stretched out a little bit. Oh, at least on my monitor, it's stretched out. Got stretched. Something's happening right here. Chromosomes are in blue. Spindle apparatus is in yellow. Microtubules are in this orange or red or whatever this is. What's happening to the cell? It's undergoing? Yeah, it's metaphase of what kind of process? Mitosis. Yeah, so mitosis is happening. And then the question on a practicum would be, yeah, you could name the process, but specifically, you know, what phase of mitosis is the cell in? All the chromosomes line up right on the equator, right? The nuclear envelope has disappeared, so this would be a nice metaphase picture. All right, what's this? Rest station. Okay, and then here we got, so here I don't see any fibers. I see a nice speckle pattern. These are chondrocytes and these lacuna. And so here is hyaline cartilage. But what kind of tissue is hyaline cartilage? CT, yeah, connective tissue. So you should be able to recognize that. Plus label all of these lead lines. Here's a lead line pointing to this space right here. What would you call this space right here? That's the matrix, yeah. The extracellular space in a connective tissue. Okay. These are cells all in the same part of the cell cycle. This was what happens before mitosis. And so all of the, I don't really see chromosomes in here, so all of these cells are in interphase, doing their normal job, whatever they're supposed to be doing. Maybe they're secreting a hormone if it's an endocrine cell. All right, what's happening here? Yeah, I see a signal dropout. So these, yeah, the chromosomes are being separated. The daughter chromosomes are separating during anaphase. And here is? Yeah, so here's bone CT. You want to say osseous CT, that's fine with me. But we have lamellae, we got osteocytes. I don't know what's labeled on your slide. Central canal right here. Okay, so bone CT, what's this one? Ooh, these cells are closely packed together. I see a basement membrane. I see apical surface. I see a lumen right here with a free space. So this is an epithelium. Now, what kind of epithelium? How would you classify epithelium? By two ways. Shape of the cell and layers. All right, so from basement membrane to apical surface, whoa, come on, cursor, to apical surface right here, how many cells do you see?
One.
So what kind of, how many layers?
Simple.
It's a simple epithelium. The shape of the cell is a nice cube, so this is a simple cuboidal epithelium. Underneath the basement membrane is connective tissue. Here's a lead line pointing to some connective tissue right here. All right, so hopefully you can see that. Well, what's this? How about epithelium? It is not. It's connective to CT. And what kind is it?
Blood.
Because here's the matrix. That's plasma. Here are red blood cells. What's this one called? Yeah, this is a lymphocyte, and here is a neutrophil. These two are white blood cells. You don't have to know this guy, but you should know it. It's a platelet for preventing blood loss when a blood vessel gets damaged. Why is this a weird connective tissue? Because plasma is a fluid. It can flow from one part of your body to another. All right, what do we got right here? Basement membrane. Underneath the basement membrane is connective tissue. So from here to here, this is what we call pseudostratified. The cells in this apical layer right here are columnar. There are some cell modifications up here. These are cilia. All right, so, and then I see a goblet cell with mucus right here. All right, so this is a pseudostratified ciliated columnar epithelium. Right, you might want to just remember PSCC so that you can remember all of the terms. And don't forget on the practicum, make sure you can tell me if this is connective tissue, muscle tissue, nervous tissue, or epithelium. Which one is it?
Epithelium.
Epithelium, right. Okay. All right, here is another kind of epithelium. Here's the basement membrane. We haven't really talked about this one yet in a lot of detail, but these are the cells that you looked at, actually, underneath from your own body. They came from your cheeks right here. So these are cheek cells. All right, so how many layers from basement membrane to apical surface?
Many.
So it is stratified. And again, the shape is determined by the apical region, and these are squamous. So it's a stratified squamous epithelium. These cells are kind of dead because they're really far away from blood vessels, but the one down in this basal layer, these are all live, undergoing mitosis, replacing these cells that you're swallowing all day long. Right? Okay, so this is going to look a lot like your skin as well. Your skin is a stratified squamous epithelium. Here we got another tube, basement membrane, connective tissue down below it. How many layers?
Two.
So this is a stratified, and by the shape up over here, these are cuboidal, stratified cuboidal epithelium. Oh, here's another strange kind of epithelium. Yeah, because I see these pillows right here. So this organ stretches all day long and then it shrinks back down. All right, so these cells in the apical region, even these down over here, can get really long and thin, or when it relaxes, they can go to being short and thick once again. So this is a transitional epithelium, basement membrane right through here, connective tissue down below it. And where we find this is in the bladder, which fills up all day long with urine, and then when you void, the bladder goes back down to its original shape, and then it fills back up with urine again. Okay, how about epithelium? No, this is CT, because the cells are far apart. These cells are secreting these fibers, so what's the name of these cells? Yeah, so here a nuclei is an organelle, nucleus is an organelle, but what would we call this cell right here? Here's the nucleus of that cell. It's a fibroblast. Yeah, so if I ask for organelle, say nucleus of a fibroblast. If I ask for the cell name, just say fibroblast, because it's the name of the cell. And it's secreting a collagen fiber right here. It's also secreting an elastic fiber. It can also secrete reticular fibers. I don't particularly see reticular fibers on this slide, but I do see ground substance, which is also maintained by the fibroblast right here. So fibers and ground substance are the two components that make up matrix in a connective tissue. And this particular one, if you see it like a stained glass window, when I look at this, I see a stained glass window, you're going to know this is an areolar CT. Areolar CT. Put your baby away. Unless that's an app you have going somewhere. Okay, rest station. Ah, what's this one?
Adipose.
Yeah, adipose connective tissue, kind of an atypical connective tissue. We'll talk about why that is in lab. But does anybody know why this is atypical CT? Because there's hardly any matrix. All this stuff that we see is intracellular. All this oil and lipid is intracellular, not extracellular. It's not in the matrix. Okay, what's happening here? Yeah, prophase. The extended chromatin is condensing into chromosomes. Centrioles are starting to separate. Your book calls it early prophase. You can just call it prophase. Here's another CT with fibroblasts secreting collagen. It's loaded with collagen. So this is a dense connective tissue. But this collagen is moving right to left over here, kind of moving up and down over here, and in this region it's kind of moving in and out of the plane of this image. And so it is dense, irregular CT. And this is what makes up joint capsules. So a kind of tissue that's pretty strong in all different directions, but not particularly strong in one. So joint capsules. These highly branched, really darkly stained fibers, These are the reticular fibers. These are the weakest fibers in our body. This is what we find in our spleen, and indeed, this is a picture of a spleen. Okay, and because these fibers are so weak, that's why it's so easy to damage a spleen. Did I have two of those in there? No. Ah, what's this? Basement membrane, connective tissue. Columnar cells in the apical region, more than one layer. Stratified columnar epithelium. And then right here, this is smooth muscle. That's an old picture from an old textbook. The new picture looks better. Here is a simple columnar epithelium. Here is the lumen of this tube. Here's the basement membrane. Down below it would be connective tissue. But that's a nice simple columnar epithelium. And then here are fibroblasts. A lot of collagen fibers all lined up parallel to each other. So this is dense. Oh, usually there's a label up here, but not on the quiz, I guess. Dense, regular CT. And again, it's CT because these fibroblasts are far apart. Here's a matrix. And it's the matrix that's important in a connective tissue. Here's some skin that we haven't talked about yet, but you could probably analyze this a little bit on your own right now. If I can get my cursor to move. Yeah, So here's the basement membrane. All right, and then here is the epithelium. How many layers is this? Stratified. What about the cell shape right here? It's squamous, so your skin is a stratified squamous epithelium, at least the epidermis is, and then the dermis is down over here. We'll get to talk about skin next time, and maybe a little bit in lab. But here I see a stratified squamous epithelium that makes the epidermis. Here is cardiac muscle. You see branches. I see intercalated discs, striations. It's involuntary muscle, right? The cells are short. Then what's happening here? A couple things you could tell me what's happening here. What phase of mitosis? Telophase. What else is happening? Cytokinesis is happening. I see a cleavage furrow developing. All right. Ah, what's this? Okay, I see chondrocytes. I see a speckle pattern, right? So I know it's not an epithelium. It's a connective tissue. And it's cartilage. What kind of cartilage? Fibrocartilage because of these big, thick fibers that are in the matrix. And they're all lined up parallel to each other. So these are nice collagen fibers in fibrocartilage. Here we have skeletal muscle, long linear fibers that are multinucleated. Here's a fiber with many nuclei in it. And I see striations, right? This is what attaches bones together, makes bones in your body move. So we call it, since it moves your skeleton, we call it skeletal muscle. Okay, the other one was cardiac muscle. Then here's another picture of skin. You can see one layer of cells here, many layers right here. These are flat cells, so your skin, at least this layer of the skin, is a stratified squamous epithelium. It's designed to rub off all the time. But that's okay, because these cells here are undergoing mitosis and replacing these ones that rub off all the time. That's how your skin is designed. Another kind of tissue. What's the general class right here? Connective tissue, speckle pattern. Here I see lacunae with, chondrocytes. Okay, chondrocytes. So this is a kind of cartilage, highly branched, thin fibers. These are elastic fibers. So this is what? Elastic cartilage, CT. What does this look like? Okay. I see centrioles here and here. I see a bunch of chromosomes, so it's not interphase. All right, and these chromosomes, some are over here, some are over here. They're kind of all over the place, and I don't see a separation into two compartments yet. So this is prophase, and your book calls it late prophase. But I see that it's not anaphase because I don't see a signal dropout. I don't see a region in the center of these chromosomes where none exist, so it can't really be anaphase. Here is metaphase. Okay, we got 15 seconds left. Let's try it. What's this? Hyaline cartilage CT. What's that? Interphase. What do we got here? That was anaphase, and then here is bone CT. What's this? Simple columnar epi. Blood CT. Pseudostratified ciliated columnar epithelium. All right, I got to go get lunch before lab. Otherwise, I know you guys want to stick around and do this some more. But it's in Blackboard for you to practice with. Sign-in sheet is going around. Make sure you sign the sign-in sheet. And so that's it for today.